How do you master the big skills you need to succeed in business and in life? Well, one way is to break those big skills into smaller, more manageable chunks. That's the message behind the new book, Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact, by physicians Adara Landry and Risa E. Lewis. Adara is an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School, and Risa is a professor of emergency medicine at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here they are to share five big ideas about small skills.
Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact is built on one core easy-to-learn principle. Every big goal, complicated task, healthy habit, and yes, even what we think of as character traits can be broken down into small learnable skills. These can be practiced and incorporated real time. We call these micro skills. Hi, I'm Dr. Risa E. Lewis, and I'm a professor of emergency medicine at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. My background is in education, design, and storytelling. My deep interests include podcasting, productivity, and creating safer and more equitable workplaces.
Hi, I'm Dr. Adara Landry. I'm an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School and an emergency medicine physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital. My career has focused on teaching professionals how to navigate the workplace while centering self-compassion. As educators and mentors, we identified a career gap in the business self-help market. Many books provide lofty goals like go build a network, be better at communication, discover your work-life balance. And yet they fail to describe the how-to, the actual mechanical steps one would take to achieve these career goals. In Micro Skills, we try to be as prescriptive as possible by sharing detailed, critical actions you can take.
It is worth noting that most professionals are not particularly good at taking care of themselves, doctors included. Our chapter one is Micro Skills for Self-Care because we believe that success does not need to come at the expense of our own health. This is the book we wish we had when we were starting our professional journey. We start every micro skill with an illustrative personal vignette. We share why the reader may need the micro skill and acknowledge why learning it may be hard. We end with teaching the critical actions, the actual how-to. These are the small, fundamental steps to learn the micro skill.
When we were brainstorming and building the framework of our book, we kept returning to three truths. Truth number one, time can only be spent. As emergency medicine physicians, we never save time. If a task is no longer necessary, we immediately use those saved minutes on something else. And no matter how we see it, every minute matters and every minute is spent. In fact, seconds matter when it comes to saving a life. But even if your job does not involve life or death situations, the fact remains that every one of us is constantly spending time on work or thinking about how we will spend our time on work. If a task is no longer required, time can never go back into a savings account for later. Something else always fills the void. Truth number two, the world is not equal. In any workplace, everyone comes to the table with varying experiences and resources. Any group of peers will have differences in education, knowledge, money, personal identities, responsibilities at home, and networks. We believe some people get a copy of what we call the workplace playbook from family or friends, but many people don't get a copy and have to figure out survival and success independently. While our book cannot solve the global inequities in and of the workplace, it can equip readers with the tools to accurately assess their own strengths and weaknesses, what they have access to, and what they lack. By taking the initiative to level the playing field with skill acquisition, you begin to gain confidence navigating the workplace.
Truth number three, learning is limitless if it is accessible. Very few things in this world are as limitless as our capacity to learn. In the workplace, an openness to learning only strengthens you, your expertise, and your trajectory. Access to knowledge can in itself feel prohibitive. For example, if you have limited financial resources or when you go home, you essentially are working a second shift. There is no way our book will teach you everything about the workplace, but it will show you the power of recognizing and resolving your own knowledge gaps to make success more accessible. We built a book of microskills based upon these three truths. Now, we share with you five key insights from our book. Insight number one, select tasks to take off your plate. Quitting things used to be hard for me. Older professionals advised, say yes to everything. So I did. My plate was overfilled with writing projects, speaking gigs, emergency department shifts, and meetings all days of the week. As I approached mid-career, people advised me, say no more often. So initially, it felt uncomfortable, but then it became habit-forming. Quitting unnecessary, irrelevant tasks and keeping fewer items on my to-do list allowed a deeper dive into developing expertise. It also brought me more joy in my work. And out of it came a book. Here are three actions to take tasks off your plate. First, audit your to-do lists. Weigh the risks and benefits of doing the optional work. Second, replace your FOMO, fear of missing out. FOMO comes from a scarcity mindset. Trust yourself in your decision to take items off your plate. Third, celebrate the JOMO, joy of missing out. With less work on your plate, you will be more focused, deliberate, and intentional.
Insight number two, set limits on time spent in meetings. For the longest time, I had no control over the number of meetings on my calendar, and there were just too many. And while I respect my colleagues, some meetings objectively felt unproductive. No decisions were being made, there was no agenda, there was too much time or not enough time allotted. And in fairness, I have led suboptimal meetings in the past as well. But over time, I have learned to appreciate productive meetings, and I started to create boundaries around all meetings. Now, when I ask what the meeting is about, I consider if it could actually be an email instead. And sometimes I block out windows for certain types of meetings. For instance, Friday mornings are blocked for advising and mentoring meetings. And on Friday afternoons, I have a very high threshold to add any meeting at all. That 1 to 5 p.m. Friday window is my time to finish up outstanding work from the week, or to rest if I'm all caught up. So here are three actions to set limits on meetings. First, trim meeting lengths. Most meetings do not need to be as long as scheduled. 60-minute meetings often work as 30-minute meetings, 30 as 15, and so on. Second, meet asynchronously. A lot of work can be accomplished without a meeting. In fact, we wrote most of our book with very few meetings and focused more heavily on cloud sharing documents, texting, and asynchronous voice messaging. Third, set windows each week where you hold meetings. With the exception of emergencies, once those slots are filled, that's it. Insight number three, establish a compassionate email culture. I remember when my inbox was flooded with emails. I tried inbox zero, unsubscribe all, and you know, these helped a bit, but emails kept coming in from colleagues. And that influx was the hardest for me to control. So we want to flip the switch a bit and focus on how you email others. Meaning, we want to encourage a compassionate email culture where everyone protects their team. So we want you to write emails whenever it's convenient for you, like after the kids go to sleep, but then schedule them to send during working hours so that you protect the private time of the recipient. We want you to try to send fewer emails so your colleagues get less to their inbox. This will actually protect your time too, because if you send less email, you often get less email. We also want you to learn how to use email tools such as BCC, which stands for Blind Carbon Copy. So here are three actions to establish a compassionate email culture. First, mind the time. Keep emails to your work hours. Yes, you can draft the email when convenient to you, but then you schedule it to deploy during work hours, and you want to try to protect holidays and weekends of your peers. Second, add a line to your signature. As emergency doctors, we are on email at all hours because we are working clinically at all hours. You can add a line to your signature explaining to the reader when you often send and respond to email. Third, select another communication medium. If something is urgent and cannot wait, email might not be the best option. A brief 5-minute phone call may resolve the issue faster.
Insight number 4, how to network for introverts. According to Myers-Briggs Company, 57% of the world is introverted. It took me years and many academic national conferences to learn habits to help me navigate these professional events. I'm socially adept and not shy, yet I am deeply introverted. And these attributes are not in conflict. I can lead a meeting, speak before hundreds or thousands of people, and be comfortable at social events with strangers. And also, I recharge, regroup, and get restored in quiet and solo environments. Consequently, professional conferences and socializing in large crowds are not my preferred way to connect. For conferences, I stay in accommodations close to the venue, but not usually at the venue. This allows me to escape for quiet breaks when needed. I eat meals or drink coffee solo, or organize small groups in lieu of large dinner events. This has really worked well as a comfortable way to grow my connections. Here are 3 actions to network as an introvert. First, take time to reflect. Consider the social spaces and conversations where they are most comfortable and joyful for you. Second, protect your energy and recharge your energy. A one-on-one walking meeting can yield a meaningful professional relationship, sometimes more than a cocktail party with numerous light conversations. And third, speak with your team about your introvert self. Many may express relief because they feel the same way. Insight number 5. One of my favorite secrets of the workplace, which is not so secret, yet nobody tells you, centers on letters of recommendation. I was applying for my first job and asked my supervisor for a recommendation letter. He said sure, then promptly asked me to write the first draft. My jaw dropped in shock. Was that even legal? I soon realized that it makes complete sense to draft my own letter, and it lessens the work of the letter writer. I know me and my work best, and I'm able to write out my accomplishments. Let the letter writer polish the letter up and submit it on your behalf. Here are 3 actions to draft your own letter of recommendation. First, offer to write the first draft. Consider even having it ready to share when you make the ask. Second, build a template. Start by amplifying the letter writer, then share your specific highlights, and describe the impact the opportunity would have on your career. Make sure you screen for errors like spelling and grammar. And third, supply references. The best letters of recommendation we have read and written included quoted comments from notable people who can speak to your strengths. Curate a list of 2 to 3 people to provide a quotation for the letter. Include their contact information for the letter writer.
Microskills are not isolated small steps without overlap or applicability. They actually build upon each other, so any big task seems doable. When you encounter a large task, an overwhelming project, a big problem, we hope you pause, think about the situation, and break it down.
Thank you so much for listening. Microskills, Small Actions, Big Impact is the book we wish we had when we were starting our professional journey. We hope these 5 insights help your journey too.
Thank you, Adara and Risa. That was 5 big ideas from Microskills, Small Actions, Big Impact by Adara Landry and Risa E. Lewis. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.